Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, 60 minutes of mystery brought to you every week from RelicRadio.com. We'll hear first this time from yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and The Starlet Matter, their episode from January 16th, 1953. And its five-minute mystery and death on a train. We'll finish off with The Adventures of Philip Marlowe and The Unfair Lady, their episode from June 4th, 1949.
From Hollywood, it's time now for John Lund as...
Johnny Dollar.
Ken Ralston, Johnny.
Oh, hi, Ken. How's Kansas City?
I'll take my word, in Hollywood it's better.
Oh?
You always liked Hollywood, didn't you, Johnny?
You want me to?
Well, there's a man there named Phil Gardner. He's up to here in starlets.
In what?
Starlets, young girls with big careers in front of them. Phil Gardner's an agent for him.
So he needs me?
Oh, we do, Johnny. Twin State Insurance. Gardner's been calling me every half hour. It's like this, Johnny. Gardner's insured a few of these starlets with us. One in particular for 50 grand.
So?
So, mostly Gardner's been babbling. He says this starlet in particular might not live. Babble, somebody wants her dead any second. You like Hollywood, Johnny?
Commission?
Fat. Real fat.
Hollywood. I like it.
John Lund in a transcribed adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Twin State Insurance Company, Kansas City, Missouri. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Starlet matter. Expense account item one, $227.70, airfare round trip on coach out of LaGuardia, flight 601, flying west. Some 3,000 bumpy miles later, the plane circled Los Angeles and a part of the Pacific Ocean and taxied down the runway at International Airport. It was 3:20 of a dirty afternoon. Expense account item two, $4.40, cab fare to Sunset Ruxton Hotel, my home away from home in Hollywood, where I checked in, renewed old acquaintances with Judy, the telephone girl, put my pale cheek against her suntan and told her I'd see her later. Expense account item three, $2 even, to Beverly Hills office of Phil Gardner, agent. He was not in. The receptionist in silver hair pointed a silver fingertip across the street and said that's where. Shea Scotty's restaurant. And Mr. Gardner would be dressed with two vents in the back, a Tattersall vest, and blue suede sandals. And you know, he was.
So you're the boy they sent from KC, huh? Wait, I'll scooch over a little. You can sit down.
Yeah, thanks.
What's your name?
Dollar. Johnny Dollar.
You want to see a picture, Johnny? Here, take a look. That's Toby.
Toby?
Toby Drake. You've seen her in pictures.
I have.
You're living. You must have seen her in pictures. Loyal moviegoers like you are going to make a star out of Toby.
Well, I'm happy for both of you.
If she lives. Somebody's going to kill her, Johnny. Murder her dead. Now, she's a sweet kid. It shouldn't happen to her to die from these anonymous threats.
Look, why don't you give it to your press agent?
Johnny, believe me, on my knees, I tell you. If I want publicity, I give it to the cops. I'm not kidding, Johnny. The kid's scared. She's in a lot of trouble.
Don't call for you, Mr. Gardner. I'll plug it in here.
Oh, thanks, Charlie.
Right this way.
Gardner speaking. Snap it out. I'm busy. Huh? No. Yeah, huh? No. Yeah. Skeptic.
Huh?
I just called you skeptic.
What's that mean?
Toby's dead. Her boyfriend called. I should be the first to know.
I'm sorry.
Look, I'll drive you over there. You'll want to see for insurance purposes, huh? I'll use the Jag. I'll put the top down.
Sure. You wouldn't go to a funeral any other way, would you, Phil?
Where? me something, a drink of water or something like that.
The place swarming with things. Chintz curtains, plump upholstery, and Beverly Hills oriental knickknacks cluttering the Grand Rapids highboy. I walked over to the three-piece section. Toby Drake was lying there, her hand trailing down to the floor. I couldn't see her face until the big man stood up.
Somebody wrapped that black silk stocking too tight around her neck.
You wrapped the stocking?
Look, Buster, a call came to headquarters and said get here because there was a dead girl named Toby Drake. There is. And all of a sudden you're here. Why?
Something they have around this town. An agent. He's Toby's.
Oh, agent? Huh? Well, well. Talk to me, agent.
Sure, Lieutenant.
Just Detective Koska, lieutenant I'll never make. Go ahead.
Well, it was like this. Johnny and me sit there at Scotty's chewing fat, and the phone was brought over, and the man on the other end says it's Mr. Fulton. And he says his girlfriend's dead. Honest, I'm broken up about this.
Well. You wrap the stocking, agent?
Johnny. He's Johnny Dollar. He's from the insurance.
Well. You been hired, Dollar?
Yeah. Twin City Insurance.
And for me, too, Johnny. All the way, find out for me who killed Toby.
Hired, huh? These guys employ you, huh? Well. Little bulge there. You carry a gun, too. Well.
Yeah. Where's her boyfriend?
In the bedroom. Named Roy Fulton. He hardly says a word to me. Go talk to him, Dollar. Go tell him it's okay. Stop. Who are you?
Johnny Dollar. I'm an insurance investigator.
Toby's dead.
She was murdered, Mr. Fulton. I'm trying to find out who did it.
We had a date. I came here. I saw her. I didn't lose my head. I called her agent. Then I called the police.
Did you kill her?
No. No, but she should have been more careful. Girls like her.
What kind of girl did you think she was?
Very pretty. She's beautiful. Now no more. Toby. Just beautiful Toby.
Mr. Fulton.
Lost. Forever.
Mr. Fulton.
For always. Nowhere. Toby. Beautiful Toby.
I couldn't get through to him anymore. I gave him back to Koska, and I got out of there. A few thoughts on Toby Drake. Toby, a kid who'd once maybe won a beauty contest. Expenses paid to Hollywood, shake hands with the stars. A nice kid. Pretty kid, on her way, now dead. I bought a paper and went back to my hotel. The lobby desk came first.
Hi, Mr. Dollar.
Any calls for me, Judy?
You got a call with a message you wanted.
Why don't you come over here and give it to me, Judy? I've never seen you standing up.
I'm taller. The message came in 10 minutes ago. You want to reach for it? Shall I read it to you?
Read it.
Goes like this. First Toby, then Stella Martin. You can't stop at Dollar.
First Toby, then Stella Martin. You ad-libbing this, Judy?
Says right here.
Who left the message?
I took the call. The man said it and hung up. What does Stella Martin he mean, Mr. Dollar?
I wish I knew, baby.
You think maybe the starlet Stella Martin used to be a starlet? She's not around much anymore.
Starlet, huh? How would I get in touch with a starlet, Judy? Oh, I know. Hand me that phone book. Come on.
Who are you calling?
A man who knows starlets past and present. Agent Phil Gardner. Oh.
Not in, huh? Why don't you try Hollywood Casting, Mr. Dollar? They know.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Stella Martin dropped from our ready file. Non-payment of dues.
Well, it must be an address where you dunned her.
2001 Magnolia Avenue, Westchester.
What, mister?
Stella Martin. She live here?
Uh-huh. You're who?
Johnny Dollar. Investigations.
You got a card that says that?
Let's go inside, huh?
Just you got a card. Just show me.
Miss Martin here?
No card, huh? Suppose I say, yeah, she's here. Then what happens?
I said inside.
Glad you did that, Sonny. Now I got a reason.
Now cut it out. I just want to...
You're smaller than you look.
Oh, try me. Later, when I opened my eyes, he was gone. I got to my feet, fell down, then finally made it over to the hallway, where there should have been a bathroom and a towel and some water. The thing that stopped me was the girl in the negligee. She was sitting on the floor against the wall. She was blonde, and her head was turned to one side as if she was wondering about me. There was a stocking tied around her throat, and she was dead.
We'll return to yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. Now, with our star, John Lund, we bring you the second act of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
I'd seen the dead girl a couple times. In the jungle picture, spliced between the main feature and the newsreel. The girl in the South Sea apron who gets chased by the gorilla. I stopped trying to convince myself it wasn't real. It was real, all right. I didn't need the pounding on the door to knock it into my head. I didn't need Detective Koska either.
What is it, Dollar? You on a rampage?
Now, you want to know what happened, or you want to be a big man?
Just be gentle with me. That's all I want you to do. 15 minutes ago, I was in a warm bed. I'll just be gentle.
I got slugged. A man 7 feet tall in a black leather
jacket. Look, I spent 5 hours questioning Roy Fulton about the murder of this girlfriend of his, Toby. Nothing. I let him go. Then I climbed into this warm bed, and I was sleeping fine. Then Sergeant Hurd called. Seems someone phoned in this address to Sergeant Hurd. You were saying what, Dollar?
She's in the hallway, propped against the wall.
Show me.
Sigh a deep sigh about the warm bed, Koska. She's young and she's strangled. And her name's Stella Martin.
You want to clear it up for me?
I got word about her. I came here and a guy clobbered me. I woke up a few minutes ago.
Nobody gives me words, Dollar. Why you?
I don't know why. If I knew why, I'd know who. You want to listen about a guy in a black leather jacket?
7 feet tall, huh?
Yeah, about. Brown felt hat. Find him. That oughtn't to be tough for a big man like you.
Don't be sour on me, Dollar. You took some lump. You see this kid?
What? Yeah.
She's holding something in her hand. What? Well, read it, Johnny. Read what it says.
There'll be another one tomorrow, Dollar.
Another one tomorrow, Dollar. Well,
what makes me so popular, Koska? Why doesn't it say your name?
Because it says Dollar. Because it says the name of a guy I stumble over when I get out of a warm bed. What am I going to do with you? Take you downtown and sweat you? Get out of here, Dollar. Get out.
Then back into the rose-scented air and the suburban lawn, now littered with friends and neighbors. And under the bright neon of the corner cut-rate drugs and sundries, the night-blooming hack stand. I took a cab to my hotel. No more messages, so I went to sleep. And the next morning, the sound of the telephone screaming the name of Phil Gardner, agent. Get here, it said. So I got there.
Girls drop like flies where you walk, Dollar. I read the papers this morning, and you were there, and another one dropped.
Now, what's the matter, Phil? Only yesterday we were in love, you and I.
Now, don't ask me, can't we even be friends? It's a tired line from a tired guy. I don't like tired.
Let me tell you something, Phil. I'm glad you called. You were going to be my first stop.
Now, look, you were hired to maybe prevent Toby Drake's dying. And this, you were a flopola, a stinkeroo. Then you stay on. Maybe you could come up with why Toby, a talented girl, had to die. Well, like I said, stinkeroo.
On your feet, Phil.
Now, keep away from me, Johnny.
On your feet.
Now
we talk.
I'm talking.
You killed Toby, Phil?
Oh, my arm, Johnny.
Toby was on our way, maybe a star soon. Also with insurance, $50,000. Beneficiary, you.
My arm.
And why you killed her?
Johnny.
And all this big talk on the phone this morning. Get down here. Cover up talk, Phil. All right. And we'll try the name Stella Martin.
I'll level with you. Just let go of my arm. Stella Martin, a 3 months ago pickup from Dorcas Drive-In on Santa Monica. A guy gets lonesome for a car hop like Stella. A friendly pickup, so help me.
Huh. You did lovely, Phil. Now, one thing more. You know a man who wears a leather jacket who's 7 feet tall?
Somebody help me. I got a madman loose.
Goodbye, Phil. You've made the morning even worse. I got to the drive-in on Santa Monica. A cowgirl with a menu and a pair of heavy-duty sheer dungarees threw a card on my windshield that said Phyllis on it. Dorcas, she asked back. Why, that's old Mel over that way. I moseyed on over to old Mel.
Yeah, howdy.
Johnny Dollar, Insurance Investigations.
Milton Dorcas, shout out a fella.
Howdy.
Howdy.
You the manager of this place, Mel?
Yeah, top hand.
What else?
Huh?
Oh, tenderfoot talk. Don't let it throw you. I need some information, Mel.
Yeah, don't be a gravel kicker, son. Speak up. What's on your mind?
Know a girl named Toby Drake, Mel?
Knowed her. Used to work here.
One named Stella Martin?
Yep. Due to work this evening. She ain't gonna make it, though. She's dead. She and Toby. Shoot. Seen it in the gazettes.
I need your help, Mel.
Deputize me? Well, I don't know. Just don't know.
If you don't help, there's liable to be another dead girl.
Peggy.
Who?
What's the matter, son? You got monkeys in your ears? I said Peggy. Peggy Bryan, on account of them three girls were thicker than Bobcat's tail.
Do tell.
Yeah, thicker than that even. Peggy used to work here, too. Drove to work in Toby's auto.
You know where I can find Peggy?
North Hollywood she lives in. Hey, wait a bit. I'll dig up her address. You want to wait, son, or you got to be right on?
I'll wait, Mel. Listen to me, Miss Bryan. I've come to help you.
I'll kill you. I'll kill you before you kill me.
Don't be crazy. Give me that gun. There. That's better.
To kill me. That's why you come to kill me.
Now, let's scream inside. We don't want to make talk for the neighbors. Inside, Peggy. Now, hush, hush, baby girl. Hush. You see? I let you go. It's nothing to be scared of. I'm here to help you. To keep it from happening. Like it did to Stella and Toby. You understand what I'm saying, Peggy?
Stella. Toby, they're dead. And now it'll be me.
Why does it have to be you, Peggy?
You don't know. You're killing. You don't know why.
I try to understand. I'm an insurance investigator. A lot of times I'm around when people die. Sometimes I get there sooner. Now help me. Help me, Peggy, so I can help you. That way will save us both a lot of pain.
I'm so frightened. Because I'm so frightened.
Whoever killed Toby and Stella, why would they want to kill you?
I know why. I think I know.
Well, tell me, Peggy.
The woman was killed. We killed her.
Tell me about it.
It was 3 years ago. Toby, Stella and I. He had a little car. He used to take trips. He was some ago. He took a trip to Oregon. One day
what?
This woman crashed into us. It was her fault. Honest, it was her fault.
And she was killed?
Married woman. Young and pretty. And married. Police said it wasn't our fault. Let us go. Only me. Why else would anyone want us dead?
It's Saturday, Peggy. What do you do with yourself on Saturdays?
I shop. The groceries. A new dress sometimes.
We'll go buy you a new one. You and me. And tonight. What do we do tonight?
You mean you're asking me for a date?
Uh-huh. What do we do tonight?
Saturday nights, I usually go to Ocean Park. It's fun. Ride with people. It's fun.
Sure it is. Saturday night, Ocean Park. We'll have fun. So I made a lot of phone calls. To my hotel to tell Judy I was going to Ocean Park with a girl named Peggy Bryan, in case anyone inquired. And I called Agent Phil Gardner and let him know where I was going. Finally, I called Roy Fulton, Toby's boyfriend, and let him know all about my plans for the evening. And then I went shopping with Peggy Bryan and then took her to Ocean Park. Peggy Bryan, Pigeon.
Let's just walk for a while, Johnny.
Whatever you say. You hungry, Peggy?
Uh-uh. Let's go on the roller coaster.
Sure. Peggy.
What?
Just stand still for a moment. Look around you. Do you see anybody you know?
No. I know what you're doing, Johnny.
Why, sure. I'm on a Saturday night date with a nice girl.
You think you'll find me here, Johnny?
You want me to level, don't you?
Is he going to kill me?
I'm going to try to stop him, Peggy. Come on, let's eat. Two tickets, please. Thanks. Let's go, Peggy.
Stay close to me, Johnny. A girl can get lost in the funhouse. Johnny.
What's the matter, Peggy? Oh,
nothing. I'm having such a good time.
Ever been through that spinning barrel?
Oh, I always fall down.
I'll hold your hand.
Johnny.
What?
That man over there. He watched us buy our tickets.
Which man?
The tall one.
Yeah, I see him. Peggy, walk through that spinning barrel. Fall down if you have to, but get right up and get out on the other side.
Is he the one?
Go on. I'm right in back of you.
He's following us.
Get out of this thing fast. I'm staying.
I've been tailing you, Seamus.
I've been waiting. You had enough, Shorty?
Yeah.
Come on. I'll drag you out of here. Now talk.
talk her, so help
You're
me.
You're crazy, Seamus.
Talk!
You think I killed her? I didn't kill Stella. She was dead when I got there. I swear she was dead.
Yeah, sure she
was. And you came in. I went crazy. I wanted to kill something to get even.
And why are you following me?
Because you're a Seamus. If we get to the killer, I want a piece of him. I didn't kill Stella. I was in love with her. You gotta believe me. You got to.
Peggy, what's the matter?
The mirror! Look, the mirror!
He was in the mirror, all right. Roy Fulton's reflection. Boyfriend of Toby. Long and thin as if he'd been squeezed together, which included the gun he was holding. I pulled Peggy down on the floor with me and grabbed for my gun.
It's her! Montdollar! It's her! I want to...
Something happened to him. Something red that splintered in the front of his shirt. But he kept coming. Then the something caught up with him. Fulton,
they killed my wife. They killed her.
Expense account item 4, 1995, to dress a pigeon named Peggy Bryan. Item 5, $112 miscellaneous. Hotels, meals, roller coaster ride, funhouse, etc. Expense account total, $366.05. Remarks, pay Phil Gardner, agent, face value of $50,000 policy on Toby Drake. Well, all in all, from your point of view, my trip to Hollywood was a failure. From my point of view, I kept one girl out of three alive, and I was lucky at that. Luckier than you usually get in Hollywood. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, stars John Lund in the title role and was written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin with music by Eddie Dunstetter. John Lund can currently be seen in the Universal International picture Just Across the Street. Featured in tonight's cast were Raymond Burr, Dick Ryan, John McIntyre, Sidney Miller, Victor Perrin, Virginia Gregg, and Jeanette Nolan. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. This is Dan Cumberly inviting you to join us next week at this time when John Lund returns as... Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Tomorrow, Gangbusters brings you on CBS Radio another true crime story, naming names and places, giving complete details on the operations of a ruthless criminal gang, showing you how the cops, after a bitter manhunt, put them out of business. Every Saturday night on most of these same stations, hear Gangbusters, the program that gives criminals wanted descriptions that help the public enforce the law and often collect rewards for their good citizenship. Gangbusters, Saturday nights on CBS Radio.
And remember, you'll find Western adventure and music with Gene Autry Saturday evenings on the CBS Radio Network.
Another 5-minute mystery.
just found out you were traveling with me.
What do you want, Thomas? This is a private compartment.
Now, is that the way to greet your ex-partner?
Beat it, you crook. I'm through with your double dealing.
Yeah, what about that dough you owe me from the last take?
You've got a head like an elephant's. Blow, brother. The air's getting bad in here.
Yeah? Now, let me open the window, then. I'll clear it out.
Hey, are you crazy? You'll blow us out of here.
Okay, Andy. Here you go.
Let go of me, you...
Good fellow, Andy. Just a few seconds, we'll be in the tunnel where it's nice and dark. And then I'll give you all the fresh air you want. Just a minute now, and we'll be there. Okay. There you go.
Nothing like this ever happened on this railroad during my time, Mr. Thomas. Can't tell you how sorry I am about your friend.
It's all right, conductor. Not the fault of the railroad. Can't stop a suicide.
Well, what makes you think it was a suicide? He might have fallen out of the window when he tried to open it.
Yeah, that's possible, sure, but he looked pretty down in the mouth when I left him to grab a smoke in the lounge car.
Well, why can you smoke in the compartment? That's the advantage of having one these times.
Andy, my friend was a little touchy about the air in there, so I came out.
What happened after you went out for a smoke?
Well, I got into a business conversation with a few of the gentlemen in the lounge, but after a while, I figured I'd better be getting back to the compartment to see how Andy was getting along.
Another 5-minute mystery.
Found out you were traveling with me.
What do you want, Thomas? This is a private compartment.
Now, is that the way to greet your ex-partner?
Beat it, you crook. I'm through with your double dealing.
Yeah, what about that dough you owe me from the last take?
You've got a head like an elephant. Blow, brother. The air's getting bad in here.
Yeah? Now, let me open the window, then. I'll clear it out.
Hey, are you crazy? You'll blow us out of here.
Okay, Andy. Here you go.
Let go of me, you...
Good fellow, Andy. Just a few seconds, we'll be in the tunnel where it's nice and dark. And then I'll give you all the fresh air you want. Just a minute now, and we'll be there. Okay, there you go.
Nothing like this ever happened on this railroad during my time, Mr. Thomas. Can't tell you how sorry I am about your friend.
It's all right, conductor. Not the fault of the railroad. Can't stop a suicide.
Well, what makes you think it was a suicide? He might have fallen out of the window when he tried to open it.
Yeah, that's possible, sure, but he looked pretty down in the mouth when I left him to grab a smoke in the lounge car.
Well, why can you smoke in the compartment? That's the advantage of having one these times.
My friend was a little touchy about the air in there, so I came out.
What happened after you went out for a smoke?
Well, I got into a business conversation with a few of the gentlemen in the lounge, but after a while, I figured I'd better be getting back to the compartment to see how Andy was getting along. As I came into the aisle next to the drawing room cars, we came into the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that Andy's room was only 3 doors away, so I felt my way along in the dark to his door. When I opened it, I felt a sudden rush of air in the room. I closed the door and tried to find the light switch, but I couldn't.
The train was still in the tunnel?
Yeah. I lit a match and saw that the window of the train was wide open. Andy's coat and hat was on the seat and his bag was on the rack. But he was gone.
I see. Well, that'll be sufficient, Mr. Thomas. I have enough for my report.
Okay. If you need me, I'll be in my compartment.
And please stay there, Mr. Thomas. For when we reach our next stop, I'm turning you over to the police for murder.
By what damaging slip in his story did Johnny Thomas prove to the conductor that he was the murderer of his former partner? In just a moment, we'll know. But first... And now, back to our story.
Are you crazy? What do you mean I murdered Andy? Prove it.
Easily. You said that when you opened the door to your friend's compartment, you felt a sudden rush of air in the room. That was true. But you then told me that you lit a match and that it stayed lit while you had time to notice several details in the compartment. And that's where your story fell apart, Mr. Thomas. No match would stay lit for more than a split second in the face of that rush of air sweeping in from the open window in the tunnel.
And I thought I had an airtight alibi.
That was your mistake. There was too much air.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. There's no other end. But they never learn. Let me give you an example. I was hired to find a thief, and I did, 1,000 miles from home. But first I found a lush with a Luger, a fresh corpse in the closet, and all because the only woman in sight wouldn't play fair.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of mystery, comes his most famous character and crime's most deadly enemy, as we present The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Unfair Lady.
The knock on my office door was soft, almost apologetic. So when I mumbled come in, I was ready for something delicate and about as self-effacing as Uriah Heep. But when the door swung open, I knew exactly how wrong I could be. The gentleman was maybe 40, gray at the temples with shaggy eyebrows and a military mustache, and built like a heavy cruiser with a pair of catcher's mitts for hands.
I'm Elliot Florey, Mr. Marlowe, Mr. Ira Bjornson's secretary. Are your services available, sir?
That all depends on what you and Mr. Bjornson want me to do, Florey. What's the job?
Well, specifically, sir, to catch a thief. May I sit down, please?
Oh, of course.
Thank you. Mr. Bjornson is being robbed systematically of diamonds.
Are they disappearing from a store he owns, or is somebody robbing his wife?
No, Mr. Marlowe. You see, sir, Mr. Bjornson owns and operates the Bjornson Mine, the relatively new but important deposit of kimberlite pipe.
Kimberlite which?
Kimberlite pipe, Mr. Marlowe.
Oh.
The geological term of the diamantiferous blue ground which yields the minerals.
Oh, of course, diamantiferous.
Last November, sir, the 21st to be precise, you worked for Mr. Craig Norton, a mining engineer who lived here in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
He recommended you to my employer. Now, Mr. Marlowe, will you take the job?
I don't know. You still haven't said anything about the stealing itself. Is it a Bjornson representative here in Los Angeles who's coming up miners?
It's Mr. Bjornson himself who's being robbed, Mr. Marlowe, at the mine proper.
Oh, I see. And he wants me to, wait a minute. This mine, this diamond mine, wouldn't be in South Africa.
No, sir, it wouldn't. It's at Rizlo. It's a hamlet 100 miles south of Nogales.
South of where?
Nogales, Mr. Marlowe. It's a city in Arizona, a few hours' drive from Tucson at the Mexican border.
Now, look, Mr. Florey, I'm a private detective in the city of Los Angeles who's at home in a barn, a back alley, or sometimes with a blonde. Not in rural Mexico, is that clear?
Oh, yes, sir, perfectly. Also, it's something that Mr. Bjornson anticipated. I refer to your reluctance to make the trip, sir. To Mr. Bjornson and Rizlo, Los Angeles is the nearest metropolis where a dependable private detective could be found. To you in Los Angeles, Rizlo is a new world.
Therefore,
Mr. Marlowe, these papers. The first is your plane reservation, Daylook's passage, leaving tonight for Nogales, where you will be met and chauffeured across the border to Rizlo.
You know, you tossed that off like it was transferring from the red bus to the E-car downtown.
It's less complicated, sir, I'm sure.
It is?
Now, these other papers, Mr. Marlowe, are both checks, each for $500. One is your fee, the other for expenses, not including your air travel. Your decision, sir.
Oh, well, my decision, Mr. Florey, is that for $500 plus, Rizlo is plenty cosmopolitan for me. I'll go.
You'll go?
I'll go. At 8 the next morning, we dropped gently out of the clear sky over Nogales, where I was met by a short, round Mexican who ushered me into a car labeled Bjornson Mines, and suggested that I sleep for the next 3 hours, which was the travel time to Rizlo, 100 miles south. So, after 30 minutes of panoramic, dry, sandy hills and occasional cactus, I did. When I woke up again, it was better than noon, hotter than Hades, and we were parked at a filling station in Rizlo itself, which could have passed for home if you happened to be a prairie dog. It wasn't until I had my eyes wide open that I realized that the man leaning on the running board inches away and staring at me like my eyebrows were on upside down was not my driver. He was shaggy hair all around an unshaven, unpleasant face that was home to a pair of watered eyes that said he was drinking himself to death. And when he talked, I knew it was on cheap rum.
You're the new mining engineer, maybe?
Yeah, I didn't know it showed.
Since you're an American, that means you gotta be an engineer.
Oh.
No other Americans come out this way. I'm an American myself, you know, from Philly. Good old Philly.
Yeah, it's a great town. What's for sale? Hot transits?
No, just being friendly. Mm. Name's Calder, M.J. Calder. I'm staying over at the Granada Hotel for a while, first floor rear. Why don't you look me up some night, any night along about 8? I used to be an engineer myself. Might chew fat a while.
Yeah, we might do that.
So, well, I'll look forward to it. So long, pal.
When my driver and I were back on the hot dirt road, I was told the Bjornsen mine was the open pit type, a deep hole about a half mile in diameter in the middle of the Bjornsen property, which was clearly circled by 11 miles of 8-strand barbed wire fence, which was guarded by 50 ex-GIM Mexicans who were under the iron fist of one Captain Juan Lufino. 20 minutes later, when we entered the main gate and were slowly driving up a neatly landscaped white pebble road, I got a different picture of life at the Bjornsen mines. It was the residential side, plush and strictly Beverly Hills, and the sprawling red brick house past the green and white tile swimming pool to the guest house beyond. Inside, I found the multimillionaire himself. It was a bald 50, perspiring and shaped like a bowling pin.
At 10 o'clock last night, Marlowe, it happened again. $5,000 worth of stones. The seventh robbery in as many weeks, excluding, of course, the usual trickle.
The usual trickle?
One or maybe $2,000 worth a month. That stealing nobody can stop. The natives, the guards, visitors, everybody. But most of them we catch, Marlowe, because in the first place, our policing is very thorough.
Mm.
And second, to steal a rough diamond is one thing, but to get rid of it is something else again.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me, Mr. Bjornsen, these big thefts you're concerned about, do they all have anything in common?
Yes. Two things, Marlowe. They always occur at night, and they are the work of somebody who knows my habits and has a good knowledge of the inside of my house. The big safe is never bothered. It is always some drawer or cabinet where I am keeping stones temporarily.
I see. And, Mr. Bjornsen, has anybody ever seen this thief?
Last night, Helen Austin saw what could be the man running through the grounds at about 11 o'clock. She said he was tall, with a lot of wavy hair. Mm-hmm. She said that he was not the Mexican. Oh, by the way, Marlowe, Mrs. Austin and her husband are staying in the guest house where you will be put up.
He works for you, Mr. Bjornsen?
No, Kelly Austin has a mine of his own about 5 miles from here. Smaller than ours, but rich, nevertheless. Oh, this will be Captain Lufino. Don't mind if he appears unfriendly, Marlowe. He considers your presence here a personal insult. Come in.
You wish to see me, Senor Bjornsen?
Yes, Lufino. This is Mr. Marlowe, the detective.
Ah. When Senor Flores came back this morning, Senor Marlowe, he spoke very highly of your reputation in Los Angeles.
Mr. Flores only talked to my friends in Los Angeles, Captain. Now, Mr. Bjornsen, you were telling me about the Austins.
Yes, they have been with us for 2 or 3 months now, while their new house is being constructed at their own mine. Their last place burned to the ground. I would suggest, Marla, that you speak to her as soon as possible. Also, the captain here will tell you of some evidence that he found here on the ground last night.
No, senor, it turned out to be nothing.
What kind of nothing, Captain?
A fountain pen, yes. It belonged to one of the office workers. Senor Barneson.
Yes?
Did you tell him about that Nat Campbell?
Oh, no. Marlowe, the International Diamond Exchange keeps us advised of the movements of the bigger black marketeers whenever possible. 3 days ago, we were told that a man named Nat Campbell, an American who was at one time an engineer, has been operating in Mexico close to the border.
Is there an accurate description of him?
No. Anything else you have to know, Captain Lufino will take care of you. Also, I am sure that the captain will be glad to show you to your room at the guest house.
Sir, it will be my pleasure to assist Senor Marlowe in any way I can. This way, senor, please.
Captain Lufino's interpretation of assist was to hand my suitcase to a boy, point a thick thumb in the general direction of the guest house, and disappear. So after thanking him for his trouble, I went to my room, unpacked, changed into a dry shirt, which was damp again in 3 minutes, and then started for the suite on the opposite side of the building, where I'd been told I could find Helen Austin. But when I was halfway to a screen door, I stopped at the sound of a raised voice that I'd heard before. It was Mr. Elliot Florey, who was about to leave and unhappy about the whole thing. When I was close enough to see Mrs. Austin, I could also see why. The lady was blonde, deeply tanned, just a shade off beautiful and almost dressed in a white linen shorts with halter to match.
I told you last night, why are you
behaving like a fool?
Oh, am I? Well, you just wait a bit, my dear. We'll see who the fool is around here. Oh, yes. Marlowe, what are you doing out there?
Calling on Mrs. Austin. Why? Do I need a visa, Florey?
No. No, Mr. Marlowe. You don't need a visa. You don't need anything. Well, come in, won't you? Elliot was just leaving.
Yes, I have to be running along. I'll see you later, Helen.
I can't wait. I'll sit here, Mr. It's Phil, isn't it? Phil Marlowe?
Mm-hmm.
Nice name. You know, Phil, I don't often get to see a new face around here, so anything I can do for you will be a pleasure.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure the pleasure will be all mine. But aren't you afraid you'll catch cold?
Why? Don't you like it?
Uh-huh.
I made it myself. I do most of my things now. These little styles are too far behind New York to suit me. My husband, Kelly, says I'm clever.
Better than that, Helen.
Kelly, what?
You're resourceful.
You startle me. Darling, this is Philip Marlowe.
I know. Ira told me you were with us, Mr. Marlowe. Can I be of some help, possibly?
No, not at the moment, Mr. Austin. Right now, I'm only interested in knowing if your wife here can add anything to a description of last night's stranger. Can you, Mrs. Austin?
Why, no. If there were anything else outstanding about the man, I certainly would have told Ira.
No doubt. But what about the run-of-the-mill things? His dress, the way he walked?
Like most men, Marlowe, he wore one pair of pants, one shirt. He had only one head. Also, like most men, he smelled of liquor.
Rum, maybe?
We all drink rum here. How about joining us in some? After dinner? Long about eight?
Thanks, but long about eight, I've got to be back in Rislow to see Mr. Calder. Ever hear of him, Austin?
Why, no. Should I have?
I don't think so. He'd have very little in common with you people, with one exception.
Which is what, Phil?
Rum, Mrs. Austin. He's crazy about it. After I left Kelly, and what with one healthy cloudburst ad, it would make a great Sadie Thompson, I found Ira Bjornson and told him that I thought last night's stranger, one M.J. Calder and Nat Campbell, could be all one and the same, and that I would like to go into Rislow and check on just that, which suited him fine. So after apologizing for having just let Captain Lofino go off the evening in his car, he gave me the keys to a battered station wagon and wished me good luck. 4 hours later, when it was dark and I was in Rislow and walking the dirty length of the ground floor corridor of the Granada Hotel, which was darker, I had a feeling I was going to need it.
Yeah? Who is it?
Marlowe, Calder, the new man at Bjornson's mine.
Oh, fine. Be right with you.
Yeah.
Didn't expect you to take me up so soon.
Yeah, well, you know the mines, Campbell. One's just as dull as the next, huh?
That's right. What did you call me?
Campbell. That's it, isn't it, Nat?
No. His name's Calder, M.J. I told you that today.
Yeah, and at the time I believed you, good old Philly included. Come on, Rummy, uncover. The masquerade's over. Open up while you still can talk. What do you say?
Okay. Okay, ain't the biggest secret in the world. Here, sit down.
For keeps! Why, you lousy lush! You don't aim any better than you lie!
I had enough, I tell you.
All right, we'll see. Now, come on, get up. We'll start all over again after we check you once. Your kind usually has a nasty Luger tucked away someplace. All right. Now, what do you know about... Hey, Campbell, that stuff over there seeping under the closet door. The color isn't right for rum, brother. It's too red. Well, Captain Lufino.
Yeah, he's dead, Marlowe. So don't move. You'll be right with him.
Yeah, you see, I was right, Campbell. Your kind always has a nasty Luger someplace.
Marlowe, I didn't do that. I didn't kill him.
Oh, yeah, sure, sure. He committed suicide in your closet and closed the door as a gag, I suppose.
That's enough. I don't try to be funny. I didn't even know he was here. I was out. When I come back, I found him.
Campbell, that line retired with a flintlock rifle. If you hadn't parboiled your brains in fusel oil, you'd realize it.
But it's the truth.
I'll tell you what the truth is, cousin. Lofino had a piece of evidence that tabbed you as being out of Bjornson's mine last night at 11 o'clock.
But he passed it off as a fountain pen that meant nothing because he resented me horning into his territory. Then he came here alone to put a pinch on you and get the credit. Only you dropped him instead.
That's a lie. And I can prove it by the best witness in Mexico, next to Bjornsson himself.
Who are you talking about?
One Mr. Elliot Flory, that's who. I was in the Cafe Kilota last night at 11, and Flory saw me there.
No dice, Campbell. Flory didn't get it from no galleys until this morning.
You're pretty seedy for a big city boy.
Yeah?
You can check the bartender at the cafe and see if I'm not right. But right now, I'm going to put you away so I can get out of here. Turn around and walk slow. Out the back way and down the stairs. Go on, move.
What are you going to make my murder look like? Robbery?
Don't act so brave. You'll live because I figure you'll clear me one way or another, whether you like it or not. Now hold it. That's far enough. Now open that cellar door. Okay. When you get out, don't waste time looking for me. I won't be around. So long, countrymen. Don't hurt yourself. Go on down!
Cellar was as light and wholesome as a Parisian sewer. Even with the help of several generations, termites, it took a half an hour to break out. When I got upstairs again, it was deserted except for the late Captain Lufino. I went through his pockets, but they held nothing more exciting than battered cigarettes and some small change, but under the tight sash around his waist was a small green suede pouch containing three minute diamonds in the rough. I began to see what Bjornsson meant by the usual trickle. Everybody, including the chief of his own guard, seemed to be in on the act. I dropped the pouch in my pocket and headed for the Kilota Cafe, where two American bucks and a nasty snarl at the bartender brought me the fact that Elliot Flory actually had been there last night. Had waited 2 hours for somebody who didn't show up, and then left. That made my next stop the mine. So I bounced the station wagon out of town, back to Bjornsson's house, and started in. But a pair of bare shoulders above a snug linen halter intercepted me.
Hello. You're back safe, I see. Enjoy all the sights in our filthy, stinking little town?
Not much, Mrs. Austin.
You should have taken me along as a guide. I could show you lots of interesting things.
Like what, for instance?
Like the sky. I like things clean, soft. I like lights and music and people. I like you, Marla.
Save it. That Buttons and Bow's routine is strictly your own problem. I've got work, and it starts with Elliot Flory. Where is he?
What makes you think I'd know that?
Because you two have been keeping close track of each other for some time. You're anxious to drop it, but Flory isn't. And now he's got a hold over you, and you're worried silly.
Why,
and
you
skip
did?
That, too. From what I know, I can fill in a very unpleasant yarn, and I will if I have to. So come on, baby, no dramatics. Let's have it. Where's Flory?
Marlowe, you're a louse. But at that, you're better than he is. Went over to our place, the mine, about half an hour ago. I don't know why he wouldn't tell me. Just warned me to keep my mouth shut and left.
That doesn't make sense. Where's Mr. Austin?
My good husband is off somewhere checking on supplies, he said.
Okay, I'll pay a call on Flory right now. When I get back, baby, I'll have a lot of answers. So I advise you to wait up, huh?
Sure. When you're all through with him, do me a favor, will you, Mr. Tough Detective?
What, throw him back?
No, kill him.
After she said it, she stared at me for a moment and then turned and walked away. And from the bitterness in her face, I figured she had more on her mind than she told me about. But as I beat it around to the driveway where I'd left the station wagon, climbed in and wheeled out the gate, I forgot about theories and headed for the Kelly Austin mine and a big-scale diamond thief as fast as the rutted road and loose body bolts would permit. I'd barely gotten out of sight of Bjornsson's house where from somewhere out of the truckload of shadows I was hauling in the rear end of the station wagon, the muzzle of a gun was shoved hard against the back of my neck and held there.
Pull over and stop, Mr. Marlowe, but don't take your hands off the wheel.
Austin, you're off your rocker. You've been working too hard.
Not so hard that I didn't get back in time to see you kissing my wife. You don't deny it, do you?
Well, for what it's worth, you got your subject backward, but never mind
don't
that.
Don't turn around, Marlowe. I'm sorry about this. I liked you when we met today.
Now, listen. We'll take this up later in detail. Right now, I'm after a guy who's been biting into Bjornsson's diamonds, and I'm sure it's his own secretary, Elliot Flory.
Flory? Well, that's absurd.
Yeah? And what's more, he's currently up to something cute at your mine.
He's at my mine, Flory?
That's what I said. Now, after I've seen him, Buster, I'll be indignant with you all night if you like.
You're a clever liar, Marlowe, but it won't work. You're not getting out of this that easily. I'm going to tell Bjornsson what you've done, but first, you cheap masher, I'm going to get some satisfaction out of you personally like this! Oh!
First,
First one side of my head and then the other exploded like Roman candles. I fell a long way out of the car door to the road. When I finally stopped falling and started back to my feet, I had a double handful of Mexico in my mouth. All the rest of it I could see looked big and black and deserted. The station wagon was gone, and so was my enthusiasm, and the picture of Marlowe on foot in the middle of the Mexican mountain looked pretty stupid. I trudged back toward the house. But I stopped as a pair of headlights swung out the gate and slashed down the road at me. Came to a sandstorm halt.
Marlowe, what happened to you?
It's a long story, Mrs. Austin. The less you hear about it from me, the better for all of us.
What do you mean?
That Kelly, your husband, was watching when you wanted to show me the Mexican sky and the moon. Up there at the house. Just a teensy bit irate about it.
Oh, is that all?
That's enough.
What about Florrie in the mine, Marlowe?
How should I know? When I got tangled up as a heavy in this corny gaslight melodrama, Wait a minute. Did you put that jacket on since I saw you last?
No, what's the matter?
Come over here in the light. Come on! Sure. Now listen, Helen. You told me once sewing was your hobby. Did you happen to make this item yourself?
Yes, I made it. What's so important about that?
Aren't you long shot, but if it pays off, I'll catch both a killer and a diamond thief. I'm going to borrow your car, beautiful.
Wait a minute. I'm coming with you.
No, you're not. I've got to get Florrie and stop a murder, and that takes a different kind of speed than you've got. So long, baby. With every jolt of the car, another Roman candle went off in my head, but I kept the gas pedal jammed to the floor until I saw the turnoff sign for the Austin mine. Then I cut the lights and pulled over. It was 400 yards up the side road to the gate where a Mexican sentry in a battered sombrero leaned against a post on a barbed wire barricade. I skirted him and followed a path outside the fence until I found the landmark I was looking for. There was another sombrero, and a few feet away, sprawled out, sleeping soundly from a blow on the back of his head, was its owner. Two strands of the barbed wire had been cut, so I crawled through and up to the edge of the big pit. It looked black and bottomless, until a tiny flicker of light down deep inside went on for an instant, and then went out again. That was my cue. But I was 15 tooth and nail minutes playing mountain goat on tiptoe down 150 vertical feet of ladders and catwalks before I was near the bottom and close enough to hear a pick biting hard clay. When it stopped suddenly, so did I, and listened with my .38 clenched in my hand. But Florrie had been surprised by someone from the bottom of the pit, not by me.
Austin, how did you... No, don't shoot, Austin, please.
Why not, Mr. Florrie? You found what you were looking for, didn't you? Didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And what precisely did you find? That my mine has run out? That it's worthless? That I've kept it going only with stolen diamonds?
That's right. I suspected it. Now I know. You're the one who's been stealing from Bjornsson. You bring the diamonds here, you salt your own ground with them, and then re-mine them as fresh stone.
And get the full market price, yes. But what do you hope to achieve with this information now, Mr. Florrie? You realize that I have to kill you?
No, wait. I have nothing against you, Kelly. In fact, I have a proposition to offer you.
You're in a poor position to bargain, but go ahead.
Now, you'll never get away with killing me.
Won't I? I got away with one murder. Bruno. He would have found out about me eventually because I made a mistake last night. But that sot Campbell will take the blame for him. And right now, you're just another trespasser, so make your offer. Make it good. Go on.
All right. I promise you, no one will ever know about this. If you'll get out of Mexico and leave Helen here with me.
You... dirt. I'm not going to shoot you, Florrie. I'm going to strangle you with my bare hands.
I'm going to turn my back and let you. Yes, cool's out. Drop it, Austin. Stand still, both of you.
No, it's too late for that.
You hit him, Marlowe. You got him. I think he's dead.
Yeah. And I got something for you, Florrie. I hope I can get the slime off my fist.
Please, Marlowe, pour yourself another here. It'll help your headache to go away.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Bjornsson. It's cooler out here than it was inside. It's better now, thank you.
I don't know. I am happy and I am sad both. You found him, my thief, all right, but you lost me a friend in the bargain.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we live out here, our friends are as dear as our diamonds.
Well, there's one thing about diamonds, Mr. Bjornsson. They won't go bad on you.
You're right there, my boy. It's hard to realize that Kelly Austin was our man.
Yeah, I imagine it is.
You said it was Helen's jacket that gave you the answer. How was that, Marlowe?
Well, Lufino was carrying a little green suede pouch. I thought it was his.
But actually, that was a piece of evidence that he found last night. It wasn't until I saw Mrs. Austin's jacket of the same green suede that I realized the pouch must have been made from the scraps left over from the jacket.
I see. And since the wife sewed the jacket herself, that made the husband the logical owner of the pouch.
That's right. You know, in a way, you might say Helen's responsible for the whole mess.
How do you mean, Marlowe?
Well, it all adds up like this. Helen wanted diamonds bad. Her husband started stealing for her. Things went well until he almost got caught.
That was last night, huh?
That's right. Running across the lawn, Kelly dropped the little pouch. Lufino, who caught sight of him, followed and found the pouch with the three diamonds.
But Captain Lufino thought Campbell was the thief and went to Campbell's quarters in Rislo to force the confession out of him.
Mm-hmm. Kelly followed him, killed him before he learned too much, knowing that the rum-soaked Campbell would take the rap.
That Austin woman, she's got no business here in this desolation. She loves diamonds, but not in the rough.
No. She wants them around that beautiful neck of hers, with big city lights bouncing off them in all directions. But the lady wouldn't play fair to get them.
Mm. She's packing now. And Mr. Florey has already left bag and baggage. Even Lufino is gone now. You know, this is going to be lonely around here, Marlowe. I couldn't prevail on you to stay over a while.
No, Mr. Bjornson, I'm afraid not. I'd probably catch myself picking little pebbles out of every clay bank I found. And the first thing you know, I'd be stuck here, too. Besides, what would Hollywood Boulevard do without Marlowe, and vice versa? When the driver who was taking me back to Nogales was finally ready, and we started out of the mines, I took a long last look down into the gaping, dirty, lonely pit that was the Bjornson Diamond Field. And then, as we headed north and for the border, I settled back and thought about my own diamond field. The one that stretched out for 50 miles from the San Fernando Valley to Long Beach in blazing brilliance. Yet, in its own way, I knew it was just as dirty, just as lonely, and just as tough as the pit at Rislo. But it was my hometown.
Adventures of Philip Marlowe, created by Raymond Chandler, star Gerald Moore, and are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. Script is by Mel Donnelly, Robert Mitchell, and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Parley Bear, Betty Lou Gerson, Hans Conried, Paul Dubov, Wilms Herbert, and Nestor Paiva. The special music is by Richard Orant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
She had soft brown eyes and an accent, and she came to town with a job to do. But before it was done, death had struck three times. Then she was gone. And all because of 30 drops of pigeon's blood worth $50,000.
Later this evening on CBS, you'll hear a voice saying quietly, "A tortoise told a household pest, goodbye, goodbye. An MD said, you'll pass the test up in the sky." Those words are a magic key to $53,000 in cash and prizes. Like to take a try at it? Then be waiting for Sing It Again, CBS's hour-long fun fest of music, laughter, and wonderful songs, later tonight on most of these same CBS stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Now, stay tuned for Gangbusters, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's Case Closed for this Wednesday. I'll be back next week with another hour of old-time radio crime. In the meantime, you can find past episodes at relicradio.com alongside all the other podcasts. Links to our forum, Facebook page, Shoutcast stream, everything Relic Radio can be found there. Also ways to donate if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. You can do so from the website as well. Got a brand new downloadable set for your donation of $10 or more featuring 12 stories from Lucille Fletcher, Sorry Wrong Number, and the Hitchhiker fame. Good stories? I think you'll enjoy it. Just click on the donation information button on the website for more about that. Big thanks to those who have donated, and thank you for joining me today. Be back next Wednesday with another hour of old-time radio on Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.